Welcome to Soils at Work, the biology of soil health, an initiative of the Compost Council of Canada, Henner Waste, Overton Environmental, EnviroClean, Waste Connections, The Forks, Cities of Brandon, Portage la Prairie, Steinbach, and Winnipeg, and the members of the Compost Quality Alliance, supported with funding through Manitoba Conservation and Climate, and Growing Forward Too, a federal-provincial territorial initiative. The Compost Council of Canada and our compost facilities are excited to offer this learning through workshops as well as webinars and online education, providing classrooms at your own convenience and at your own pace, such as this audio learning program. This is Chapter 3 of our 8-chapter series. So let's begin. Chapter 3, The Biology of Soil Fertility. Section 1, How Plants Get Their Nutrients. Nutrients are substances that provide living organisms with the nourishment they need for growth and maintenance of life. Like people, plants need nutrients to survive and thrive. However, the list of essential nutrients required by plants is fairly limited. Some are needed in large amounts. These are called macronutrients. Others are only needed in small amounts and maybe only at certain stages in the plant's life. These are called micronutrients. Each one of them, however, is essential for every plant's survival to some degree or another. The macronutrients are generally considered to be nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and sulfur. The first three are required by every plant in significant amounts, which is why the most commonly sold fertilizers are advertised on their NPK values. Nitrogen is used by plants for many essential functions and is the basis of amino acids and thus proteins. Phosphorus is a necessary component of DNA and RNA and is the base for ATP, which is the energy molecule. Potassium is the regulator of water and carbon dioxide levels in plants. The other three macronutrients also play fundamental roles. Calcium is a key component of cell walls. Magnesium is the center element in the chlorophyll molecule, which is the key to photosynthesis. And sulfur is a component of two important amino acids, which are the basic building blocks of proteins. The micronutrients are only required in small amounts, but are still vital to healthy plant growth and reproduction. They include boron, chlorine, copper, iron, manganese, molybdenum, nickel, and zinc. This list does not include the three non-mineral elements, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, that make plant life, and all life for that matter, possible. These elements comprise more than 95% of a plant's weight, but are considered to be the basic constituents of plants rather than nutrients. In general, they are not obtained from the soil, but from the air and water via photosynthesis. Finally, all of what was said is not to say that plants don't use other elements. They do. However, only the nutrients just mentioned are absolutely essential. Of course, scientists are always learning more about plants, and the list of essential nutrients will probably increase in number in the future, as it has in the past. All of the essential plant nutrients, with the exception of nitrogen, are originally derived from the mineral component of soils, in other words, the rocks. Zinc, for instance, is found in mineral compounds all over the planet, usually in very small amounts. On average, soils contain about 50 parts per million of zinc within their mineral components. This means that 1 ton of soil minerals, 1,000 kilograms or 1 million grams, will contain, on average, 50 grams of zinc. This may seem like a very small amount, but it translates to about 150 kilograms of zinc per hectare, based on a depth of 1/2 meter. And this is not all the zinc potentially available in a hectare of soil. More zinc can be found in the soil organic matter, because most of the zinc taken up by a plant is returned to the soil in the plant residues. This organics-based zinc is then recycled over and over. In addition, some nutrients arrive in the soil through what is called atmospheric deposition. In other words, blown in from elsewhere on dust particles. The same processes apply to all of the other nutrients, except nitrogen, which is fixed in biochemical form by soil microbes. More on this later. It is very important to understand that nutrients in their rock-based and organic residue forms are not available to plants. Plants can only take up nutrients that are soluble in water. Fortunately, nature has many ways to free up nutrients, releasing them as ions into the soil water. Nutrients are released from minerals by a number of mechanisms. Some are physical and chemical in nature, such as organic acids found in soil water. Others are biological in origin, such as the release of specific enzymes by microbes and plants. Nutrients are released from organic residues through the action of microbes. More on this to follow. Ions are either positive or negative in charge. Some are cations, positive charged ions, and some are anions, negative charged ions. Cations are attracted to the negative charges on clay particles or on particles of organic matter. To go back to our zinc example, since it is a cation, it is often absorbed on soil particles. Molybdenum, on the other hand, is an anion and tends to stay in solution in the soil water. As a general rule, soils usually contain far more nutrients than a plant needs. In fact, our relatively young Canadian soils contain enough nutrients to supply crops for thousands of years, even with the loss of some nutrients to harvest each year. However, and this is the rub, most of these nutrients are not plant available because they are tied up in minerals or, to a lesser extent, in soil organic matter. A small percentage of these nutrients is always available to plants, however, and these are either dissolved in soil water, this is called the available pool, or loosely attached to soil particles, the exchangeable pool. Soil tests tell us how much nutrients we have in the available and exchangeable categories. Farmers can then fertilize to a level that will ensure that their crops have all of the nutrients they need, since all synthetic fertilizers are already in a soluble, plant-available form. But nobody is fertilizing natural ecosystems, such as grasslands or forests. So how do these plants get enough nutrients on a regular, timely basis to grow and reproduce? The answer to this question can be found in the story of how natural fertility works. But this story has evolved quite a bit in recent years. First, let's look at the older version of this story, found in all but the most recent soil textbooks. It goes as follows. As plant roots and root hairs grow through the soil, they access nutrients. This is essentially a random process known as interception. However, this random exposure to nutrients all by itself would not be enough. They also depend on two routine, ongoing physical soil processes to bring nutrients to their roots. These are called diffusion and mass flow. Diffusion is the scientific term for the tendency of substances in solution to move from areas of high concentration to ones of lower concentration. Nutrients in solution in soil water, for instance, will generally, over time, move towards plant roots. This is because the roots are regularly absorbing nutrients, which lowers the concentration in the immediate area around them and creates what we call a concentration gradient. Mass flow is a somewhat similar process, but instead involves a water gradient. Plants are always drawing water up from their roots via transpiration. As the water goes out into the atmosphere from its leaves, the lowered pressure above pulls water up from the roots through passageways in the body of the plant. This creates a lower water pressure in the roots, which then are able to absorb water from the areas of higher pressure in the soil immediately around them. In turn, the soil near the roots becomes the low end of a soil water gradient. As water moves from further afield along this gradient into the dry areas, it brings the nutrients it contains in solution with it. But what about those cations, attached to soil particles by means of an electric charge? Plant roots take care of this problem by releasing hydrogen ions into the soil water. Some microbes do this as well. These hydrogen ions replace cations on soil particles, essentially kicking them off the particle and back into solution, where interception, diffusion, and mass flow can deliver them to the plant. Section 2, the underground carbon trading systems. This older version of how plants eat is certainly true. However, it is far from complete. As scientists have learned more about the soil food web and its relationship with plants, a newer understanding has developed. It turns out that microbes play very important roles, not just in liberating nutrients from organic matter and minerals, but also in getting those nutrients to the plant in a timely manner. Their work greatly enhances the relatively slow processes of interception, diffusion, and mass flow. There are two main processes by which this quicker delivery is accomplished. The first process is the result of something scientists call the rhizosphere effect. All terrestrial plants exude carbon-rich substances from their roots into the rhizosphere, a term that simply means the soil close to the roots. These exudates include sugars, carbohydrates, organic acids, and various other organic compounds produced by the plant from the simple sugars it created through photosynthesis. Many of these substances are a great energy source for microbes. Therefore, the rhizosphere is to microbes like a watering hole is to desert animals, a crucial source for one of life's necessities. As a result, the population of bacteria and fungi are much higher around the roots of plants than they are in other parts of the soil, known as the bulk soil. This is the rhizosphere effect, and this phenomenon has been well known by scientists for decades. While some of these root exudates have specific single-focus purposes, such as directly breaking down minerals and releasing nutrients, or attacking disease organisms, most of them appear to have another, broader purpose: to attract and grow microbes in the areas directly adjacent to their roots. Plants can devote more than 40% of the chemical energy they fix through photosynthesis, materials collectively known as photosynthate, to this purpose, an incredibly high level of investment on their part. Why would they do this? It turns out that they are essentially paying for a service: the fast, efficient delivery of nutrients to their root zones. It's similar to how we humans pay for the delivery of pizza. How does this delivery system work? As watering holes in the desert attract thirsty animals, so the exudate-rich rhizosphere attracts hungry bacteria and fungi. But they are not the only visitors. What predator doesn't know that watering holes are great hunting grounds? Because of the rhizosphere effect, microbial predators, remember the protozoa and nematodes in Chapter 1, find rich pickings in plant root zones. As these protozoa and nematodes graze on the dense populations of bacteria and fungi in the rhizosphere, they leave their wastes behind, and these wastes are microbial manure, chock full of plant-available nutrients. In essence, plants are taking advantage of the following facts. 1. Bacteria and fungi break down soil organic matter, and many minerals as well, and absorb the nutrients in their bodies. 2. These bacteria and fungi are attracted to plant roots because of the carbon-rich root exudates available there. 3. Predators, mainly the various types of protozoa and nematodes, consume bacteria and fungi to obtain these nutrients as well as carbon. 4. Because bacteria and fungi are nutrient-rich relative to carbon, and when compared to predators, excess nutrients are released by the predators in their wastes, that is, microbial manures. 5. The nutrients in these microbial manures are in plant-available form, soluble ions. 6. Therefore, high numbers of microbes in the rhizosphere results in high levels of nutrient availability, and these nutrients are right where the plant needs them. This phenomenon has been called the microbial loop. Plants devote much of their hard-earned photosynthate carbon compounds to soil, in effect trading this carbon for the fast, efficient delivery of nutrients right to their door, courtesy of the soil food web. The second underground carbon trading system involves the mycorrhizal fungi described in Chapter 2. These organisms establish connections with plant roots and use them to provide nutrients and water directly to the plant in return for sugars and other carbon-rich compounds. Unlike the organisms in the microbial loop, these fungi establish an actual physical connection with the roots. There are many different species of mycorrhizal fungi. These fall into several general types, the most well-known of which are ectomycorrhizal and endomycorrhizal. The ectotype do not penetrate plant roots. They set up their trading sites on the plant root surfaces. They are associated with conifer trees and some deciduous trees, and so are of limited interest to the farmers. The endotype, on the other hand, infect plant roots, setting up shop inside them. One type of endo, known as arbuscular mycorrhiza, creates small tree-like structures inside plant roots where the nutrient carbon trading takes place. The common used acronym AM comes from arbuscular, which means tree-like, and mycorrhiza, which is the shortened form of mycorrhizal fungi. AM is the type of endomycorrhizal fungi found most commonly in agricultural fields. The hyphal networks established by these fungi can be quite extensive. These networks explore and mine areas that plant roots cannot reach, greatly extending the feeding area of the plant. Most agricultural plants, that's corn, soy, wheat, most vegetables, establish mycorrhizal associations, although not all with the same species and not all to the same extent or degree. The main crop exception in agriculture are the brassicas, which do not establish any mycorrhizal associations whatsoever. Mycorrhizal fungi can be extremely beneficial to farmers as they help crops in a number of important ways. They provide greater access to nutrients, particularly phosphorus, but many others as well, delivering them directly to the plant. They provide drought protection as they also deliver water to the plant when it is most needed. They play an important role in disease suppression. More on this in Chapter 4. They are key players in the development of good soil aggregation and structure, as we discussed in Chapter 2. They help to increase carbon sequestration in soils. More on this in Chapter 5. And last but not least, they are helpful with weed suppression. With respect to the last point, many annual weeds are either non-mycorrhizal or have only a weak association with these fungi. This can be a great help to farmers in managing weeds as long as the AM are kept alive and well in the soil. The plants that have mycorrhizal partners, the crop, have an advantage over the many weeds that do not. In fact, weeds can actually be starved of phosphorus by the fungi, who will deliver all of it to their plant partners. In Chapter 7, we will talk about how you can manage your soils to ensure good levels of mycorrhizal fungi. Summary. Plants need certain essential nutrients in order to grow and reproduce. These include the 6 macronutrients: nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium, and sulfur, as well as 8 micronutrients: boron, chlorine, copper, iron, manganese, molybdenum, nickel, and zinc. With the exception of nitrogen, which is fixed from the atmosphere by microbes, all of these come originally from the mineral component of soils. They are released over time by various chemical and biological mechanisms and can be found in ionic form in soil water or loosely attached to soil particles. Nutrients are also recycled in the soil by microbes as they break down organic residues. Plants can only absorb these nutrients if they are dissolved in water. It used to be thought that plants had only 3 ways to access these dissolved nutrients: interception by roots, diffusion of nutrients along a concentration gradient, and mass flow. We now know that these processes are important, but only part of the story. Microbes are not only involved as decomposers, they are also a fundamental part of 2 types of underground carbon trading systems. Using these systems, plants are able to access more nutrients more quickly and with more control over the process. The overall trading scheme works like this. Plants offer the products of photosynthesis, substances such as sugars rich in carbon, to the soil food web in return for faster and more complete access to nutrients. There are 2 types of these carbon trading systems underground. In the first, known as the microbial loop, plants put out their carbon-rich offerings through their root systems as plant root exudates. These exudates attract very large numbers of bacteria and fungi, which are themselves rich in nutrients due to their consumption of organic material and their ability to free up nutrients directly from minerals. As they congregate around the plant roots, predators, protozoa, and nematodes consume them in large numbers, releasing excess nutrients in the root zone in plant-available form. In the second system, plants form associations with a type of fungus known as mycorrhiza. This is a more direct trading system, where plants provide the sugars to the fungus, and the fungus provides nutrients and water to the plant. This ends Chapter 3. Thank you very much for listening. This chapter, along with 7 others, is part of Soils at Work, the Biology of Soil Health, an initiative of the Compost Council of Canada, Penner Waste, Overton Environmental, EnviroClean, Waste Connections, The Forks, cities of Brandon, Portage La Prairie, Steinbach, and Winnipeg, and the members of the Compost Quality Alliance, supported with funding through Manitoba Conservation and Climate, and Growing Forward 2, a federal-provincial territorial initiative. The Council invites you to take the self-managed quiz found at www.compost.org to help test your understanding of the information provided and become a soil builder. Remember to follow these important steps to be a soil builder. Cover the soil, keep roots in the ground, add compost and optimize other inputs, support plant and soil diversity, minimize soil disturbance. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your interest.